Well, how you
doing? You did this thing. Okay. We are live from the winter meetings. This is a combination fireside chat via Paul Sport and Paul Sport, but also the craft. We have guest Lance Brzezowski and guest Enosaurus. Special guest, of course. And this is wild. This building is wild. We still don't know what anyone does here. So we instead are just going to talk some pitching really quickly. And Sport, I'm going to start with you. Is there any deal, anything that you expect to hear before we end?
Oh, that I expect to hear. I got to be honest, I was 100% that Soto would sign, so I feel vindicated there. Honestly, I think we'll see a big trade. I don't know what it is. I'm just speculating.
Give me your favorite trade that's going to happen.
Boom. Fine. Crochet.
Two?
The Yankees to make up.
Where are they going?
Soto. Crochet to the Cubs, baby. Come on. Oh, makes stop, the most sense. It makes the most sense. I'm the marquee guy. Come on. This is like in brand.
Love left.
I mean, it makes too much sense.
Where is he actually going to go, man?
Crochet?
Yeah.
The Red Sox.
That's the other one.
Red Sox need pitching pretty bad.
Yeah, they do.
He's going to be a Yankee. It's true. He's going to be a Yankee. I think the Yankees, now that they lost out on Soto, are just going to go heavy on $50 million somehow plus trading for the other options.
Yeah.
Now, is Crochet that much better than, say, Burns and Fried on the market right now? Ina, what do you think?
Yes and no. I mean, the other two are obviously older. So the aging curve is part of this discussion, but also they're more refined as pitchers. They have a wider arsenal. But with Crochet, you're betting that he can add. I have had this conversation with Crochet before, though. It's not going to be a splitter. He says every time he throws a splitter, his elbow hurts.
He needs a splitter.
So
no one needs
to add.
Stop with the splitter.
But that's I think he needs another pitch. Maybe he could bring the slider back in, be a three-pitch guy that way. He was doing some of that, I think, late in the season.
Right.
But I don't know what it is exactly. Maybe a sinker.
He was throwing that late.
Lance put out a fantastic video. You got to check it out about Garrett Crochet showcasing that. Yeah, Crochet was adding that sinker late in the season.
It's crazy. I think your model loved it, too. That was one of the top five.
It was like a 6 TLV or something for us. Yeah.
It's partially because he just throws everything hard, so you're raising a floor on any individual pitch grade by throwing, averaging 96, 97. But
it still is a lefty.
You're not using that a ton to righties, right?
Actually, I would say that it's a big thing because you're talking about a breaking ball, right, for Crochet, which would be like that would be the lefty nullifier. But a sinker would do that. A sinker inside, same-handedness, fantastic. You buy the cutter then for righties, and you have the four sinker to both.
Yeah.
You know, to me, it's something
a small
really
mix.
Required.
Still a small.
Absolutely.
I think ideally, you get the cutter and the sweeper working.
When you're that good, though, When the bar's that high, I think it can be kind of a similar mix and still find a lot of success. I'm with you, Nick. You know, I ranked Crochet really high. I know that. Did you get a lot of pushback on that?
Well, he was at like 50 something and ADP and the first of Arizona. I was like, you guys are nuts. It's three. SP3.
Who are one two?
Oh, Scoobal and Steve.
It's the SK.
Okay. Fantasy
purposes. Scoobal
Scheme. Oh, God. I hate Scott, though. It's the worst.
Not, it's not with the breath.
I wasn't saying bring back Scott or anything. But then you said, you know, yes and no about Burns Fried versus Crochet because you also have to give up the assets to get Crochet.
Yeah.
And would you rather just give money and get one of the big free agents, or give the assets to get Crochet, who I think has a higher ceiling than both, but what's that cost going to be? And I think it would be pretty high.
I mean, I'm on board with Burns. I feel like there's a lot of similarities to Gerrit Cole in terms of, staying healthy, body of work, large arsenal. And I even think there's upside in his arsenal. He's thrown the sweeper that he plays around with. As he gets older, he's going to throw that sweeper more. He's going to round out the arsenal. He has such a good feel for spin.
Yeah.
The cutter is, it's not as good as it was when he was like, just at its peak. But it's still the best fastball on the free agent market.
Well, here's the thing, though. I remember actually doing this live podcast with you, in San Francisco, and saying, look at Burns's cutter. It's getting drop again.
That's right.
All of a sudden, in September, it was the cutter of old. Yeah. It returned. He got whiffs. He was able to actually use that at the bottom of the zone. And just adding that extra break meant that this cutter that used to the entire year be like YM log right in the middle of the strike zone and now properly dropping as it used to, which meant less damage on it, easier to get deeper to the bats, the strikeout rate. So we've seen fall for Burns. Good to go right back up. I absolutely adore Burns, but do you like him more than Fried, Lance?
I like more than Fried. Yeah.
All right, done.
I think Fried's interesting.
You'd be worried about giving the whole Burns truck.
Fried or Burns? I don't think I'd be as worried. I think the problem here is, like, you look at everyone posting online the regression and strikeout rate and regression in the cutter specifically, and I almost feel like the assumption is that when you look after that four-year window that it's just going to keep going down.
Yeah, right.
Whereas, like, you talked about this a lot, too. He's a really good pitcher. The track record is really strong. I'm confident he has other pitches that could work.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's a chance it either bottoms out or comes back up.
Right.
I think everyone's just assuming because they see the trend line going down, it will continue down.
Yeah.
In which case, you can't pay him $30 million a year. But what if that's not the case? What if he goes back to 2023 Corbin Burns, where the cutter's slightly better than it was last year? Then he's easily worth it. He's still money.
Just continues what he did last year for a while, and it has, like, a long peak, and it's healthy.
Right.
That's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, huge. Exactly. Not to mention, there's, of course, a slider involved with Corbin Burns that has routinely had really high swing strike rates. Kind of lost it a little bit last year, then found it again. The changeup and the curveball, as well as part of that mix. It just feels like you have all the things, Burns. It's just, like, little fixes here and there, as opposed to someone, like, is so reliant on velocity or just one pitch or two pitches. But then you look at Fried. And if you want, like, a model of an aging, like, fine wine pitcher, it's Max Fried, right?
Right.
And you would think that that would be someone that a lot of teams would be like, wait, I'll give you that 6-7 year deal, even with that forearm scare and a little bit of the injury.
But I think that does.
And that's really what the problem is, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's a big deal because I looked at, there is research, you know, peer reviewed research that links forearm strains to TJ.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense, sort of anecdotally. And you know, this is, it's all part of one chain. If this starts going, that's protecting this in a lot of ways, you know. So I'm really worried. We already had the TJ,
yeah.
You know, so now you're talking about a second TJ,
right? And, you know,
maybe that keeps the cost down enough to make him an attractive buy.
That could be the key, but I'm not sure it's going to. And that's my concern with Fried, is paying him on a scale similar to Burnsy. You know, and I'm somebody that's been promoting not putting too much injury risk on guys in terms of safety. But I definitely think when you get to the other end of it, of guys that carry more injury risk, I think Fried has to be up there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd be nervous as a team looking to go for him. I think he is a plan B for teams if you don't get Burns. But I got Burns a good cut above Fried as far as free agent pickup.
I'd also really want to distinguish what the weights are here, because we're talking about injury risk. And I'm absolutely with you guys. Fried is a larger injury risk. But let's just have some fun. Say, all right, they're both healthy. Is the skill set that much different for Burns versus Fried in the next 4 years?
If you guaranteed it, I wouldn't. If you could guarantee me health, I wouldn't have Fried and Burns too far apart.
Same with you, Lance?
I think I'd have Burns a good portion apart. Yeah. I think the pure, like, feel he has in the cutter and how you eat that individual pitch is, I understand, like, Fried has this weird cut fastball.
Right, like, it changes. It's like a sinker this way, cutter that way.
I just think Burns' spin capacity, his ability to do what he's done with his cutter is more impressive to me than what I'd be able to get out of Fried.
Sure.
The game definitely shrinks if you guarantee health, but
right.
I wouldn't say they're like,
that there is.
I still think it's a tear break.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking Burns. And I think one of the things that's the key is that, like, you're always going to have a worse fastball as you age. And
right.
So,
right.
You know, if I can buy a guy who actually still has a good fastball, then I'm going to do that, because that's, you know, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Fried's fastball is not that great.
Sure. With Burns' strikeout rate, to go back to him for a second, do you think there was anything to pitching in Baltimore and feeling more comfortable to put the ball in play because of the wall that might change if he, say, goes to Yankee Stadium, where you are going to be a little bit more susceptible to homers, to where he could change the arsenal a bit, dial back up into getting the strikeouts? Because I know that's the big concern with Burns, but he still put up a brilliant season, especially from a fantasy perspective. And I do wonder, because you mentioned Cole and how he can kind of change. He's really cerebral about his pitching. I still think there is strikeout upside with Burns to kind of get it back. And I just wonder if Baltimore had any role in that because of the wall. He could trust the outfield as far as, like, full hitters going against
him. So that's a fun conversation about pitching to contact or not, or guys, like, leaning into it
right, or
not. Do you guys believe that Burns was changing it because of that?
I don't know if he was changing it because of that, but I know what he has in the back pocket is a full season of, like, 30% sweep producers varieties, which would jack up the strikeout rate you're talking about. Yeah. So it's just a matter of whether he wants to do that. He used it at the end of 2023, right after the All-Star break, right? He flipped the sinker and added the sweeper, threw it a little in the playoffs, then backed off at the beginning of this season and brought it back. So is this a thing that he only wants to throw late for playoff time because of the arm stuff, which I know you mentioned before, or is it, like, actually a pitch he's willing to throw a quarter of the time, which would push the striker right up versus strike.
Yeah, I think you might be right that there was an intentionality to maybe more pitching to contact, but I think it's more about health.
That's fair.
You know, I think the way that you see that he added that drop late in the season and he added the sweeper late in the season when they were headed towards the playoffs and when they needed to win the games more often,
Point, yeah.
It feels like, oh, he's got that in his holster, and he doesn't want to use it all year.
Yeah, yeah. I can see that.
I mean, also, you saw the first game of the year, 11 strikeouts against the Angels, with only Mike Trout being the only blemish there, and okay, that's what he can do, and now let's hold it back.
I got this, and like you said, it's in the back pocket. And that's interesting, too, thinking about it more as the full 6 months. Pitchers can definitely do that. I think we as fantasy folks are like, no, do everything right away from April on. And no, he's kind of dialing down. Yeah,
absolutely. So where,
wonder what happens with a guaranteed deal.
Right.
So where do Corbin Burns and Fried land, Eno?
I've been saying Corbin Burns to Baltimore because I think they have to open up the comp at some point. They have a new owner. They have an obvious need for an ace at the top. It's a decent rotation, but, you know, putting Burns on top, it makes sense. They have familiarity with him, and they've seen all his, you know, medicals and are really comfortable with them. If they ever were going to open it up for a pitcher, sure, it would be Corbin Burns. So I've been saying that, but obviously, you know, they haven't done it before. So.
Right.
There's new ownership, though, too.
Yeah.
Time could be. For them to, they can make their stamp early.
And where would Fried go?
You know, I think the Yankees had a good meeting with him. You know, the Yankees have the Soto money, you know, jangling around their pocket. But the Red Sox are, you know, I think a contender for all the top pitching. They need it pretty badly.
Yeah. Lance?
I'll go Giants for Burns, and I'll go Yankees for Fried. Yeah. But I see Eno's points for sure.
And I'm going to echo most of Eno's points there because I got Burns. They got to. I think Baltimore has to. Yeah. If they're really serious about being a team in the AL Beast, they got to go up and do that. It can't just be Grayson and a group of guys. It's got to be Burns, Grayson, and then start filling in the 3, 4, 5. And then I had Crochet to New York and then Fried to Boston. And then you could flip them if one went the other way. But I agree that the AL East should get both those pitchers. Actually, all three of you throw in Crochet.
So the year is 2009. A New York team goes off and gets all the people that everybody wants. But this year it's going to be the Mets. So I think the Mets are actually going to get Burns. And I agree with you.
That'd be
Fried is going to the Red Sox. That makes all the sense to me. While the Yankees still get Crochet. Okay, guys? Still get Crochet. All right, so I want to talk about another guy who's already signed. And that is Blake Snell. And trying to understand where he fits among all of this. First major guy to go. Blake Snell, we've never talked about him before. never talked about him.
Nothing to talk about.
Obviously, I'm just going to summarize this in 2 seconds. There's second half Blake Snell. There's first half Blake Snell. There are many reasons why second half Blake Snell has succeeded. We've been waiting for that full year of it. Not just a 120 ERA over 20 starts, Blake Snell. Are we going to see that in Dodger Blue, Lance? Is this it?
I'm fascinated to see what the Dodgers do in terms of usage. I feel like a lot of the times when they pick up guys, they have some intentional plan of like, we want you to throw this more or this more. You saw this with Flaherty at the break, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, no, we want more curveball lefties instead of the slider and inverted righty usage. So I imagine they have some kind of plan. I'm not entirely sure what that plan is. Partially because Snell in the past has shown that he could do a variety of different things.
Sure.
Here's the change.
It's a variety of things too.
Pushing slider and like, I like him a lot. Like he's this fascinating guy that everyone probably knows this, but from the perspective of like high walk rate, but I think he has some semblance of command. Like it's it's just he refuses to throw bad pitches behind an account where he's damaged, which is like
poster child way to pitch, of really. Mistake rate, number one mistake rate for years. And it's not even close. It's like first and second and third and fourth.
Yeah. I mean,
as an approach.
Emmanuel Classe, in that, Trevor May pointed out that there are some closers that when they get to like a 2-0 or 3-0 count, are just like next.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I think he had some percentage where he looked at like how many guys battled back from a 3-0 count. And Class A was like the bottom of it. Just did not care. And it only works if you strike people out at a 3% rate.
Sure,
it's
sure.
Actual math. Where you're like, oh, if you walk guys at a 10% rate, strike guys out at a 30% rate, that's fine. You start walking guys at 10% rate, it's the basis of K minus BB is one of the strongest predictive stats in pitching. You know, so it works. That's an interesting thing to say about Blake Snell in terms of aging. Because the strikeout rate is probably going to go down as he ages.
You would think,
What does he look like if, you know, he's striking 24% of the guys out and still walking 10 to 12%?
Right.
You know, is he a good pitcher for that?
So you have the two breaking balls, of course, the curveball and the slider for Snell. We don't really know if it's going to be there. The slider is a sub, I want to say, 25% zone rate pitch. The strike rate on it is routinely around 50% or so. Then you have the curveball that in the second half of last year finally became that big zone strike pitch. That was a big change for him.
And I don't know if that's really going to come back. It's really just been the fastball has been like, hey, I'm throwing you for strikes. And you're saying, a great point, like, as he gets older, that's going to be harder and harder to get for him. While the changeup, big, big change for him in the last 2 years. Hopefully that continues to be a big
change. There's some upside in a slider. I think they could change a shape. I think they could maybe go with a harder gyro slider. It's been a kind of in-between pitch that he loses.
Right.
And he routinely loses it, and he says he doesn't care because, you know, it's traditionally a pitch that would be against lefties, lefty-on-lefty pitch. And he doesn't see that many lefties. So, you know, he says he doesn't care. But if you make that more of a gyro slider, it can be a weapon against righties and make him more of a true larger arsenal guy. So I think there's some upside in that.
And I'm certainly happy with the team that Snell went to because of the intentionality that they have with pitchers that Lance mentioned. You always feel comfortable with a handful of organizations when they get guys that they're going to get the best out of them. And we've seen Snell be best pitcher in baseball type guy. Very obvious why he wasn't early last year, the late signing. He was probably the safest bet to sign early. Didn't know he'd be the first guy off the board, but it makes sense, right? He probably told Boris, we're not doing any of that garbage from last year. You find the best deal and get it done.
At all at the amount of money he got? I mean, it's no different than the case he made last year, the last time he was on the market.
Right.
You know, and nobody wanted to give him that money last time.
I guess what seeing changed? It again.
He only threw like 110 innings.
But I guess
like,
seeing
why,
him
oh,
be
now he gets 185.
Best pitcher in baseball for another half season or in the contention for it. I think maybe that was enough of a selling point. And the simple fact is we're another year forward where you don't need guys going 180 at a time. And who knows that better than the Dodgers, who try to get a collection of 10, 12 guys that they can get the 6 months out.
I don't know that I trust them to get a lot of innings out of them.
No, and I don't know.
Right?
Like they'll space it out, right? If you're only going to get 140 from him, and some of those are lost early on, obviously it depends when you lose them, and you can't always predict when
it's
going to come.
It's a good real-life case,
but yeah.
For fantasy, I do wonder about the innings.
For fantasy, it is tough, but again, we don't need the innings as much there either. I'll still pay top dollar. Snell's in my top 10.
Yeah, it's wild to me. Kyle Bland, of course, with our PLB projections, is like, Blake Snell's a top five pitcher kind of thing.
I'm with Kyle.
However, as a fantasy manager, if I want to go into that, the anxiety that Blake Snell brings every single year.
Draft just how you manage.
I can't deal
with
it.
That's fair. Take Aaron Nola. Take guys like that. Draft how you want to play, and if that sort of you know tension and anxiety bothers you, don't take a Snell. Take a safer guy. The only problem is don't overrate the safety of Framber Valdez, Logan Webb, Aaron Nola, those types, because they can break too.
Never overrate them, Spore.
I love those guys, actually.
All right, we're going to move on to a couple other guys. One other actually the same team formerly of Blake Snell. That is Walker Buehler. And what I actually have seen reports of here inside the winter meetings is that a somewhat tepid market for Walker Buehler has suddenly heated up. He had that incredible postseason game. He wasn't very impressive beforehand. Where are we on Walker Buehler's score right now? Should teams be paying top dollar close? As high as, say, Fried and Burns, but close to that.
I think you still can because I don't know that he's going to go for the big mega year deal. Mm. I still think we're seeing something in a pillow-type contract. Maybe not exactly a pillow, which is generally a one-year deal to reestablish your value. But I don't think, like you mentioned, the playoffs, it was only that moment, really, the last two games, the relief and then the start and then the relief, that was really Buehler. So I don't think his value is all the way back. I think a 1-2 year deal or a 1+1 type five is what he should look for to still get his big deal. I'm really hoping my Tigers do it. You know, they signed a reclamation that we'll maybe get to here at the end with Alex Cobb, but I think they want another higher end one. And Buehler could be that guy. I still have a lot of love for him, but obviously things did not go well this past year. So there's things to iron out. And if teams don't like the medicals either, I think that could keep the number down too.
Absolutely. And I actually talked to Evan Petzold with the Trophy Press podcast just on Saturday about Walker Buehler and the chances that he brought up that little deal for them just akin to
I'd love
clarity.
That. Yep.
I could see that happening. It's a possibility. Lance, where are you on Walker Buehler?
The big question here for me is, whether an organization believes what the fastball looked like in the playoffs.
Yes.
Obviously, like, Eno's talk a lot about, like, the wind variables there, the stadium, et cetera, cold, creates more induced vert. Like, there's a lot of – there's, like, almost like a black box there on the public side.
Right.
I think the Dodgers are the team that has the most information on, like, what exactly changed. And I'm not entirely sure whether other orgs – like, those organizations are going to have to come up with their own philosophy on what that four seam will look like. The alternative, from my perspective, is just to turn him into, like, a sinker-cutter guy versus righties. And use the four to lefties. I think he's using the four too much for righties. And we saw that throughout the entirety of the season. That pitch was just not good. And it was good in the playoffs. So I just think it's probably better to bet on the playoff four-seam shape not being what you're going to get for the majority of next year. And as a result of that, you're going to drastically have to change the mix versus the righties. I like him. What is the projected AAV right now? Is he like a...
I would think like 1 and 20-something.
Yeah, right? So he's like below Kikuchi, but like above that lower tier of righty types.
I would give Buehler, like if the Tigers went 1 and 22 or something, I'd be fine. Obviously, there's no bad one-year deal. So even if you push it up high to get somebody like Buehler to take the shot, I'm 100% there. And I think a mid-team like the Tigers, because even though they made the playoffs, obviously it's my favorite team, I don't project them necessarily to make the playoffs again next year. I think it should be a team like that that can also trade him comfortably if things are going well, but the team maybe isn't doing well. They can move Buehler. Yeah. So part of that money you're investing, you could see it as prospect investment too, because worst cases you trade him. Or obviously worst cases you get hurt. But if you're not doing well as a team and he's still doing well, you can always trade Buehler.
I really like the Tigers call for another reason. You've got Scott Harris there as the GM, and he was in San Francisco when they gave the deal that I think maybe they should give Walker Buehler, which is the Carlos Rodon deal.
Exactly.
Maybe you put an option in there. Maybe they don't put the option in there because that makes it hard to trade. So,
sure.
But something along those lines, 1 or 2 years, slightly higher AAV, but you're also making the same case, I think.
Yes.
You're saying, hey, we could be good. And if we're not good, you can go somewhere else. And also, our park is a nice place to pitch.
And we have reclamation projects. You saw your teammate Flaherty, what we did with him.
Yeah.
We can bring you back from this, that, and the other.
Absolutely. I like that fit. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm with you, Lance, on the fastball being just so good in the playoffs. It makes me question a bit. I mean, spin rate wasn't actually that high up. Velocity didn't change, but Burt was up. I mean, even inside the end of the regular season, we saw it go from 15 to 60, 65, 17, 75 by the end of it. And when I think about Buehler, I think of like 2021. What was he all about? Oh, I'm going to just dominate with my four-seamer, and then I'm going to use my secondaries just by aiming down the middle of the plate and just kind of hoping it works from there.
Yeah.
Because he had sticky stuff. He had this four-seamer that was going 20 inches of vert. I mean, it's as clear as
facts, facts, right?
Yeah. I don't know why you would know anything about sticky stuff either. So this is clear what happened. And then 2022, he was already hurt, and we saw that Burt drop down. We even saw in the second half of 2021 it dropped down.
And what did he have a real hard time with this year was controlling the curveball.
Well, right. The secondaries in general were not these so refined ones that were like, okay, cool, I'm just going to get you out with this. It's about that four-seamer. And then everything else is just complimenting him, attacking with that. But then he comes back and he misses all 2023. Now it's a 2024. Yeah, I'm going to be the same guy. No, you're not. You have a sub-16 Burt four-seamer all of a sudden. It is not an elite pitch. And he didn't really know what to do. I watched some of these games of Walker Buehler, and I know he had no idea. He had absolutely no idea what anything is supposed to do, where it's supposed to go. He's figuring it out.
He's a cutter curve guy, actually.
I agree with this. What I saw in the playoffs was, I mean, I saw 6 whiffs in the four-seamer that started against the Yankees. Not going to happen. Because that was a 17.5 vert pitch all of a sudden. 94 mile per hour velocity. Not going to stick, I think, outside of the realm of the playoffs and everything else we want to talk about, making them better in some fashion. Talk about for a full season, no way. Then you have the cutter that was well commanded away to righties, which is good. We're happy we saw that. I've become a big believer of four-seamers plus sinkers being a proper mix and taking advantage of that four-seamer in the zone, sinker coming off of it. Look at the Mariners. I mean, they've had so much success doing this. Even Robbie Ray in his stint going away with the sinker, which felt so weird against right-handers, but it worked so well to make his fastball that much better. So Buehler has to figure out, who am I?
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, I got the sense that he wasn't listening. He went in, went to a different, he asked the Dodgers to go work with someone else.
I think,
you know, to figure out how to do that, right?
I talked to some people about this a little bit. You're right. The one piece of info I throw on that was he was lost and he admitted it.
Yeah.
So the team wasn't that angry.
Sure.
That's sort of what I heard.
Yeah.
Like, they were like maybe a little surprised, but they were also like, yeah, he is lost.
I kind of even wonder if they're like, you know what, you're not going to listen, go ahead.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Go burn it down, and then we'll be here when you're broken, right?
He wasn't listening necessarily. They were like, it's whatever we're trying right now, it's not working.
Right.
So if that's what you need to do, that's what you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. So like, so it did seem by that end, four seamers were up, four seamers down. He actually did not throw things down the middle and nibbled properly. That element of Buehler does seem encouraging, and I won't be surprised if the team said, you know, we're not going to go for the pillow deal. No, we can give you a good 5-year 120 or something like that. Like, we actually think that there is a pitcher here.
You mean that's a contender doing that or a mid-team?
That's a good question. Here's what I see is that you have the major ones in Burns, Crochet, and Freed.
Right.
And once you're out.
2 free agents, 1 trade.
Once you're out.
Maybe someone.
What else is there?
Right.
You got to go and get something to stabilize for a bit. And you want to roll the dice that you can get Sasaki. You want to roll the dice for next year. I wouldn't be shocked if someone says, screw it, I think we can do this. I think we can make this.
I'm a huge Brewer guy, so I have high hopes for him, but that'd be interesting if someone really went out and put the 3-4-5 year deal on the table for him. I think he'd have to take it.
Yeah, I don't know if 5120 is exactly the number, but you understand what I'm saying.
I mean, he would become 5100 or 595 or something. I think he would have to take it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
He's two Tommy Johnson. Yeah, probably take it.
Now, one of the interesting things we saw last year were guys going from the pen to the starting rotation. Yep. We saw Garrett Boucher do that. My gosh, that was amazing. We saw AJ Puck. How great was that? Oh. And, of course, DL Hall. But Reynaldo Lopez was also there.
I believe that.
And we see a mix. We see Jordan Hicks do well and then not so well with it. But there's an interesting one in New York right now. It's Clay Holmes, a.k.a. the Adobe, of course, Clay Holmes. Do we buy that the Mets can actually turn Clay Holmes into a starter?
These dad jokes make more sense.
I do have a fiance now. All right. So, you know, do we believe the Mets can actually turn Clay Holmes into a starter?
I was skeptical because it's a shorter mix, and the best fastball is a sinker.
Is it anything but a sinker slider?
Well, we're going to find out.
Okay.
Well,
team him up beautifully.
I was hoping like, oh, he's gonna add a cutter. But he's actually shown something. He's flashed an average four seam, and I've never seen that before. So in the playoffs, we looked it up. He was had about 16 inches of vertical break on his fastball. It doesn't sound good, but his sinker has so much sink that the separation
four IVB so
playing off of each other.
Separation is huge. He can play them off each other, and he just needs something else against lefties. As good as his sinker can be, he will throw it against lefties. He needs to have more wrinkles against lefties.
Right.
If he's trying to turn the lineup over a second and third time against lefties, and he's still sinker slider against them,
yeah.
I think that's where we start to see some issues. So the four-seamer, if it can be what it was in the playoffs, you know, again, I guess we have a similar situation where we're like, oh, he flashed it in the playoffs. Can he continue to do it? I don't know why I feel more about it. I think he showed it. We don't have the same sticky stuff story that confounds our analysis. You know,
absolutely.
It's a little bit more like, hey, in the playoffs, he had good vert on his four seam. Yes, it was like 10 of them.
Well, I mean, right. But how often do you see a power sinker reliever? You see these guys as starters.
Yeah.
Why? Because, Joe, you can be more efficient with a power sinker.
Yeah.
You can get outs more often and go through games. And also, when I think about the Mets and the guys that they've gone after over the years, it's been those who can try to get me 6 innings of 3 runs.
Yeah.
Try to get through games. And Holmes does have the benefit of, hey, I not one but 2 secondary breakers, the slider and the sweeper, that get whiffs. These are over 20% swing strike rate pitches.
So it's not like he should be better than Jordan Hicks, right?
Right,
right.
He should be better. Better than Jordan Hicks.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't have that split.
Right.
Good.
That's a positive as far
as yeah, we're good. He doesn't, I mean, look, I see.
Better injury history than
yeah.
Look at Jack O'Hanlon's. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. But Clay Holmes does not have the command. That's always been the big question. The big thing that makes Yankee fans so upset is that he doesn't know where the sinker's sometimes going. And all of a sudden,
part of that might be Sam Chickenwake. I talked to
absolutely
people
could be.
Said that it can be finicky. You know, Alex Cobb had a sweeper, and he just didn't throw it that much.
Sure,
because he was like, "I'm not sure."
Yeah, exactly terrified of the thing. If you're a starter, I actually think you can become better at wrangling that thing than a reliever, where it's just like, "Oh, this is what it is today. I got to deal with it."
Well, no,
I
can actually go one inning too.
Right, I gotta like go through a game and really figure it out.
I gotta throw this 3 or 4 times to see if I got it.
You're like
not throw it once and be like, oh, I don't got it.
That's out. Yeah, because you're only going once.
You're plumbing the mane of the sink. Hey, babe, we got this today. Yeah. Let's go. I mean, Lance, do you think this is an experiment that's going to work in New York?
I think it is, and I think it will for the regular season. And then you're probably not going to need to start the postseason. You can flip back to leverage.
Oh,
so that's like the advantage I see, especially for the dollar value they gave him. I also had a pitching coach tell me that he basically wants not Hefner, but he wants all of his pitchers throwing like as many pitches as possible, especially, and I think it applies beautifully to a guy like Holmes, where it's like we're playing around with some ideas on using more
pitch
many pitch types.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. Not like 150 pitches.
That actually should be pretty cool.
30 pitches an inning or else.
I phrased that poorly.
That's great.
Why not? Well, anyway,
all your pitchers pitch types, diversity. Serious, just do it. See
what I wouldn't get surprised. I've heard that the plan is in New York not only to feature this 4-seam for Clay, but to work on a split finger and to also maybe try a cutter. I'm not sure that when I think of feel for spin, that I'm like, oh yeah, Clay Holmes is going to be like a 4 breaking ball guy. Like I don't know if I have that much respect for spin.
as much as I think his sinker is amazing and his sliders are pretty good.
I mean,
so you're talking about Griffin Canning.
Oh my gosh. Let's not go there. But no, so correct me if I'm wrong, guys, if you know this, the arm angle for Clay Holmes, is it more over the top? Is it side? Is it? Is
oh, he's actually, worse? It's pretty high.
It's pretty high. That's how he gets to see him shoot the weight on the.
He's a Bryce Elder type where it's a super high release height. But
it makes sense for the bird coming in at 16, right? Because, of course, you have this behind the ball more spin efficiency on the four seam allows it to go up. So when I hear that, I think cutter is the thing.
Yeah.
And it does make splitter more sense.
That was my first sense.
Generally, when I hear a sinker guy, I think you're down lower to get the spin shift away this way, which means that splits no way because you got to stay on top of the ball for it to have any sort of command and consistency on it. It's really hard to be good with the splitter coming down like this.
Yeah.
But if you're telling me he's like this, coming across, I get it. Fine. You still be his number two pitch. I like splitters in number three.
You're just like when they're deep in the arc.
My slight concern, the concern would be like, where does the gyro sit relative to the cutter? We talking about this.
Right.
You get really inefficient.
Gyro and a cut fastball.
Yeah. Unless you go to like that.
Almost a cut fastball.
Right. Yeah.
Then, like, do you just have him cut the
first cutter?
So it's like he turns into like this.
I think you would just do it. Would
it's like a 10-0 at 90 something.
Just going to turn the ball.
Yeah. I'm flipped to the 265
swing strike rate pitch as opposed to 20% that we've seen so far with the slider. Right? I'm thinking, like, I need another strike pitch because of that ridiculousness of the sinker. Yeah. That is just an 8 point. It's the year of the cutter.
Just triggering.
It's the year of the cutter.
I mean, are you into Clay Holmes on the Mets?
Yeah, I actually am in on it. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, that's pretty stunning. Dig into the numbers, you start to see this could definitely work. There's always the Mets going to Mets stuff, which I know gets trite sometimes, but things always seem to break against them. But maybe this is the year. They get Soto. They bring in Clay Holmes here. Let's see if they do a big move, like you were saying. Maybe go big for Burns or Fried or something. Whoa. But I am really intrigued by this. And the RP to SP does not scare me the way it used to. When we first started seeing these, I was like, I don't know about this. I still remember the first big one was CJ Wilson at age like 30. Wow, there's
Robert Chamberlain. What are you talking about?
It never really worked,
but then, what are you talking about?
But I remember when CJ Wilson just joined the rotation and dropped 200 innings for like three straight seasons, right? Not everyone does that, but we're seeing so much more success with it. Cool. I'm generally interested in it. And Burns is technically one of those guys,
Drew,
too.
Woodruff was as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I think this can definitely work. Now, from a fantasy perspective, are we looking at like 130, 120 innings? Yes. But we don't need him to be great because Clay Holmes is not skyrocketing up the ADP boards either. So, I think we can get some quality innings out of him for fantasy purposes, even as deep as shallow as 12 teamers.
Oh, man, I love that. I mean, he's very much of that upside flyer party, just kind of seeing how it goes.
I love these types of pitchers in draft and hold, because in a draft and hold situation, you just need innings, you need options.
Yeah.
And he might pitch for you in both roles in a draft and hold, you know, just because who knows what your roster looks like. You've had draft and holds where it's like, all Swiss flags.
Absolutely.
You know,
and
just
early,
like, I'm
too.
Just happy to have
in May,
set up
that's
guys.
Injury is Swiss flag.
Yeah, the little Swiss flag is the red cross for the injury. And part of why I don't take a lot of prospects, too, because if you get four or five injuries early and then you got three, four guys in the minors, who are you playing? But I agree. I think draft champions is a good spot for somebody like Clay Holmes. Get that triple-digit inning total and kind of see where it goes. And like you said, probably not going to use them out of the rotation in the playoffs, but maybe not even at the end of the year, depending on how their rotation develops. So maybe he's picking up some cheap saves when to give Edwin Diaz a breather for a playoff stretch run if they're secure in their playoff spot.
Oh, man, I want to hear Clay
coming in after he loves it.
Right, I want him.
I was trying to be nice.
Like a six-year-old playing trumpet. Trying to do like
a fake
tree fox. Like
a recorder. Playing a recorder and something.
Right.
And then Holmes blows the save and Budo comes in. That's
he's
got that down.
That's the guys from the Monty Python playing the trumpets. I'm not going to make that one anymore.
I want to answer a question, though.
Oh, boy.
You know, just generally, at SBRP, there's some interesting, intriguing names. I've talked about Griffin Jacks a lot. He has the large arsenal. But one of the other names that came up as a possible conversion that could be someone you take really late draft and hold, will pitch in the big leagues, iffy injury history. Interesting arsenal. Nate Pearson. I've heard he's doing one splitter during the season. I've heard that's actually a good pitch for him. And I wonder, is it easier to keep some people healthy on a 5-day schedule than like the sort of intermittent schedule of reliever or what you saw from Nate Pearson?
He wasn't particularly different in any way. They moved him on the rubber, I think, a couple days after they got him to be more centered, and it didn't really help. Like, the four seam still got beat up. I think it makes some sense. I do think, like, from what Hoyer said, they can't have enough pitching, et cetera, but their rotation options are already pretty deep. Yeah, and I actually think they need more velo in the pen. So it's to me, it's like I actually think Pearson slots more logically into late inning stuff. But I, from the perspective of trying to maximize value on a player like that, I do see the path towards a starter. I just, you need more pitches there. He can't be forcing slider. I don't think the forcing is good enough. So do you go to like a sink? Like, I like the concept of the split. I thought the pitch he threw last year was pretty good. He's had it in the past.
I mean, I think he should just be better.
I mean,
that's all you got to do.
Just make your fastball better.
It's that simple. If I can speculate on one for my favorite team, is there a world where Tyler Holton could convert all the way? Because, right, he filled every role. Right? Yeah. He pitched 1-9. He's got the arsenal for it, but is it good enough to turn the lineup over a couple times? Do any of you think that Tyler Holton could be a switch guy?
Because I was like, you need to be able to lose.
That's the problem. He doesn't have great fastball to kind of build the foundation.
Command, there have been other guys who don't have great stuff and make it with Gronk off of command.
Yeah, but I think Hinch probably still going to keep him in that utility role, that super fireman's role. But I feel like it'd be interesting if Tyler Holton did get a chance at 3-4 innings a pop.
So I want to mention this really quickly. Nate Pearson, no. Keel Killian, yes. And I. We're at the winter meetings. It's really nice, by the way, just watching like and seeing everybody just walking by here. Amos Nesmith. Interesting. He needs to do more. He's going to be in one of the projects. We just got right behind us is actually Aaron walking by. We have Ken Rosenthal and Joel Sherman, and DePond has actually walked by as well, which I know Lance is like, oh, my God, my boy.
Yeah, just my guy.
But by the way, Aaron Boone, look at his line.
Sharp suit.
Yeah, the swag, too. It was nice. You know, we saw Alex Cora here the other day, just yesterday as well. But there's one more guy we're going to talk about as we're running out of time here. Would you guys rather sign, if you're a big league club, Walker Buehler or the Reclamation Project, Jack Flaherty, Spore?
I think I'd go with Flaherty.
Why is that? How long are you doing that too?
Yeah, I was just about to say, you got to go a longer deal. So it has to be a team that's open to something lengthier because I think he's getting a 4 or 5 year based off of what he did here. I don't know, man. I was so excited when the Tigers did it. I've been in the bag for Flaherty from Jump Street. So the fact that they got him pretty much all the way back, he was actually better with the Tigers than the Dodgers. I think they saw the blueprint of how to get it done with him. Now that he was back with the Tigers, succeeding with the Tigers and the Dodgers, I think I'm in on a 4-year deal for him. Whereas Buehler, like you said, you guys, he was lost as can be. We don't know if he knows the pathway back. I think Flaherty's just more as guaranteed as you can get as a pitcher, between he and Buehler, he's a much safer bet over the next 3 years than I think a Buehler is.
That's interesting. Interesting feel. We got Blance here. What do you got?
I'm a little torn there. I think I'd take Flaherty.
It was a good question.
I think I'll take Flaherty, but I guess I'm like, if you could reclaim Buehler and figure out the forcing, like, I think there's more in there from a pure, like, what are you throwing?
I do agree with that. I just think we're starting here with Flaherty and Buehler has to catch up.
I agree. Yeah. And it's like maybe Buehler's ceiling is perhaps a slight above Flaherty.
Agreed.
I'll go Flaherty, I wouldn't be totally thrilled with either, though. Can I say that?
Might be weird. He's going to the Fangraphs page. He's going to the Fangraphs page.
I just wanted to point out, we're talking about him as a safe option. 2023 Jack Flaherty, 4.99 ERA.
I stand by that. Not safer.
I'm going to take the unknown behind door number two rather than the known.
Which one is it? The goat?
It's Walker Buehler. I'd rather wander into the unknown. I think it'll be fewer years for Walker Buehler.
What about on same year?
I don't want to be stuck on the hook for 4 years and two of them are the bad years.
I think that's totally fair. What if it's four years for both?
Then I'm going to take Jack Flaherty. I do agree.
So here's the thing. I'm taking Buehler. And I'll tell you two reasons why. One, Buehler, as we talked about before, wider arsenal. I think that this age is better than Jack Flaherty.
That's definitely
does.
True.
Two, when you look at Jack Flaherty, I mean, this is a man of inconsistency. Even when he was healthy, or before even the downturn,
even as a stud Cardinal,
it was first half good, second half bad, got injured this way, then that way. It was always a rhythm thing with him. And what I saw this year with Jack Flaherty was his slider and curveball command right at the bottom of the zone was perfection. I've ever seen it from him. And then
Derek's calling me.
Oh, man, Derek's calling. Get out of here.
Bye.
I was helping him out.
He's got more important stuff.
Four-seamer over the zone was the sneaky play, trying to, like, don't hit me over the zone. I just want to set up my secondary stuff. Wasn't able to do that as effectively as the season went on as well. And I just see a guy that has that perfect breaking ball command consistently, it just doesn't seem right to me. Well, Bueller is much more of a talent. Yeah, I have all these pitches. I can command it pretty well if I know what I'm doing.
I think those Flaherty critiques are definitely fair. And like I said earlier, I love Bueller. So I don't want to frame this in any way where I'm anti-Bueller. I definitely want my favorite team to go for him. I just believe a little bit more in what Flaherty did last year, that maybe he can get away from some of that inconsistency. Because you are right. Over the course of his career, even at his peaks with St. Louis, you'd get St. Louis fans saying, what's up with this guy start to start?
Yeah.
How is he not the ace every time out? I guess they were used to that with Waino and Carpenter for years. But, I still think on a longer-term basis, I would go Flaherty. But, man, if Bueller can get back, I still think there's ace upside, true ace upside with Bueller. And yeah. I don't think Flaherty's necessarily that quite high of upside.
Absolutely. All right, so we're going to close this one out with the most fun thing we see ever at the winter meetings, and that is trades. I want a surprise trade. I don't want a Garrett Crochet trade. I don't want a Bellinger trade, a Kyle Tucker trade. I want one where we go, oh my gosh, that's a passing in his burgundy suit bomb.
Yo, that suit is amazing. Go to
Lance. I got it. What do we got?
I don't have the team he's going to, but Sandy Alcantara.
Oh, there it is,
right?
That's hot.
The Marlins are in a particular spot.
I'm saying
you look at JP Morosi tweet, right, regarding Luzardo. No. I think that has implications above Luzardo. I don't think it's just a Luzardo thing. Yeah, I think it's potentially a
What was the Morosi tweet to everybody that's not familiar with
it? I believe he just said he's Luzardo's drawing interest from both teams.
Sure,
something along those lines. I just think it's not just him. It's not like the Marlins like, we have one guy available, and it's him.
Yeah.
I think other teams are like, what about Sam?
Yeah,
right?
Gosh.
A little more control. He's coming off TJ, like, I love that. I don't know where he'd go. Maybe you guys can help me with that. But
I'm really that
Dodgers.
They
just seem to acquire everybody. So right. Why not? Right.
That is very compelling.
Brewers would be a lot of fun.
See history with the Marlins and Brewers doing deals like this.
Yeah, yeah.
That'd
be
fun. Like
that'd be fun.
Brewers not over the top strikeout rate kind of guy, volume guy. That makes all the sense to me.
Yeah. That's like, my hot take.
Yeah. Yeah. But what you got here?
All right, Seattle, but trading one of the stud pitchers. Now they're all good.
Yeah.
But I think Kirby or Gilbert instead of Castillo, Lou Miller, which is what we've been hearing. I think they got to go get a gigantic bat. And I love Castillo. He's probably my favorite of them. That's how he got the Fireside started. But I think they got to go big and trade Kirby or Gilbert to really get that middle of the order stud. And I don't know who that is. I'm gonna cop out like Lance and not give you the exact team. But I think they got to trade one of the big dogs instead of just trying to trade Miller or Wu for a decent bat. You got to get somebody who can really impact the middle of the order.
Absolutely. I'm going to go with one that I've never said before. And I'm telling you, this is it, guys. This is the moment. We're going to see it this week, finally. Bailey Falter is going to the Rays.
That's a game changer.
It is happening. Bailey Falter to the Rays. And we've seen all this history with the Pirates and the Rays, of course. It's
right.
An extension, boy. The Rays are going to love this. Bailey Falter's going to the Rays. You heard it here. First in the 20 millionth time. But I want to thank Lance Rosowski for coming on.
Always,
it's so great
always
to see you
in person
and do this. Paul Spohr, always lovely. No, come here, buddy. Hanging out
we're driving to Austin.
We're going to have some road trip takes. Thank you all so much for watching the live stream. Go watch Fireside Chat and The Craft on the YouTube channel as well. That is it for the winter meetings. My name is Pollock. Have a great night, guys.